We are shows what you know. We'll always watch TV. And if you think we can't, we'll watch more and you'll see. That's why the people of the web believe in Jim from Las Vegas and Jacob from Sweden.
Welcome to Shows What You Know About Game of Thrones. This week we're discussing Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 2, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, written by Brian Kochman, directed by David Nutter. And, guess we were wrong about the whole naming thing, huh? Yeah, so already it's Shows What We Know, am I right? My name is Jacob Burrows.
And I am Jim Scampoli, and yeah, wow, we really dug ourselves into a ditch with that one. But I think... otherwise, we are your experts on Game of Thrones. There's only one reason why you would tune in. We are here to discuss, yes, as Jacob said, episode two. Yet another kind of, well, I guess not so much setting the stage, but, you know, the calm before the storm. And I'll say just generally, I thought this was a great episode.
Yeah, it's a good point. Like, a lot of Game of Thrones is the calm before the storm, like, over and over and over again. But there's different flavors to it, I'd say. Like, the first episode was, like, almost literally putting things in place, like, physically moving the pieces around, as Game of Thrones is wont to do. But here, I did like most of this episode, because what it does is... you know, it lets these characters bounce off each other, which usually I'd go like, oh, are we really spending time on this? Oh, we do the fight White Walkers, blah, blah. But actually, it feels like this is like the last chance we have to get to see these characters bounce off each other. So extending this basically one night or one day into a whole episode felt completely right to me.
I agree. We did get an email on this episode. Do we want to read this first?
Is it on this episode or the previous one? It's on this one, right?
This one, correct. Yep.
Yeah. Let's save it for later, I'd say. If you want to send in your feedback, do send it to showswhatyouknowshow@gmail.com, and we'll put it in our feedback section.
I will say it's very mixed on the episode, okay. Which I get. I don't feel like any of the points are bad, but I guess maybe I'm in the end game now, Jacob. So I'm being more forgiving, and I think we've been kind of talking about that a lot between our discussions of last season and kind of going into this season. And of course, if I could bring up your video again, kind of also resign yourself by the end to be like, all right, well, whatever, I'm defeated. and what else am I going to do? I've donated years of my life to this story. What am I going to stop now?
Yes, very true. So we're in agreement. It's a fairly good episode. Speculating about the future, I mean... We knew the next one was going to be a big one just from the runtime, from the director and stuff like that. But, I mean, now the promise is even more clear, obviously, because this is like, they can't have another build-up. Like, some people are saying, oh, it's time for a siege. And I'm like, well, maybe we can fit in a siege, but we also need to fit in a lot of action and movement is the problem. Whenever there's a big action episode... some of them I love, some of them I don't love. There's a contrast between, I'd say, Blackwater, where there's like a lot of stuff going on, a lot of different types of scenes, and there's a change from the beginning to the end. And then there's the episode where they're defending the wall, which I've criticized before because even though it's awesome action, it felt like nothing really changed by the end of that episode, you know, because it starts with the wildlings outside the wall and we're holding the wall. And at the end, it's like, well, we have like it was a dire situation from the start. And in the end, oh, it's so dire now, isn't it, guys? I have to go out and talk to them. It's like you could have skipped all of that, basically, or made it a 10-minute thing as far as how much actually changed. So at this point, they can't be fucking around and only having empty action. It needs to be action that actually delivers on changes, turning points, things like that.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, although I do love that episode.
Sure.
I guess my thing is, I don't really, it feels like, are we going to wrap up this whole Night King and Army of the Dead in the third episode? Because I don't really want that, but then again, maybe that's what happens here. I know we haven't, like, dived into the episode in general yet, but I'm interested to see how this plays out, because it feels like, well, if it isn't wrapped up here, then what? Everyone dies? Because, you know, how does it continue? I mean, I know there's like speculation, like, maybe the Night King isn't even going to Winterfell, and he's already like swooped on his dragon and he's headed towards King's Landing or something. But and maybe I'm in the minority, because I know there are other friends of mine that watch the show, and they kind of don't really care too much about the Army of the Dead. They're very interested in Cersei and how that's all going to play out and who's going to be on the throne. But I feel like, you know, hey, we're in season 8 of this. Every year there's always a like, well, the Army of the Dead, though. Well, the Army of the Dead, though. So then all of a sudden, if it's like, well, you know, we killed the Night King, and then all the Army of the Dead just toppled down because you cut the head off the, you know, the evil forces. I'm going to be a little let down, I'd say.
Oh, I can understand that. At the same time, I've also heard people say that the only way that season 8 is going to be good is if they deal with the Night King real quick and then get back to the machinations.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I love a good machinations as much as anybody.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no one left to machinate. I guess, no, that's not true, because right now they're all joined because they have a common enemy. What's going to happen with Daenerys and Jon, you know, because that's obviously a thing in this episode. What's going to go on there? But I also still feel like they're not going to kill each other. I feel like Cersei's the big threat still, but she's not a big threat. She's not been properly built up as one. So I know it's presenting that as like, oh, what's going to happen with the Cersei, though? But I'm like, I don't believe in that as much as, you know, the Night King that we built up forever.
Yeah.
So I think I would also not like for them to wrap it up completely next episode. And also, I don't like the vampire rules of, like, why has it always got to be you kill the head, you cut off the head, and everyone else dies? I did play a role-playing game where it was like, they kill the big bad, and then it's like, okay, so all the minions come after you, and they're like, what? No, how is that even possible? I'm like, no, that's not a thing. Why would that be a thing? These are lizards. They're not even they're not vampires. Like, and also, it's not always a thing with vampires. But it feels like they're not saying it outright, but they're obviously super hinting at that, even though, as far as I know, there's no in-universe, or at least in-show lore, that implies that that's the case. Or what do you think?
Well, there was when they went beyond the wall. Was it when they went beyond the wall?
You're right. They killed the White Walker, and then all the whites kind of collapsed. So their theory is, if you do that with the Night King, I guess that kind of adds up.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a little. Ooh. I mean.
Convenient.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it would. I mean, I guess there is still a lot to go, because even once you're done with the Army of the Dead, like you said, there's still an issue with Cersei. Then of course it's going to be the showdown between John and Danny, and how that's going to play out. So there is seemingly a lot left, and we have burned off 2 episodes already and a lot of setup. So it's totally feasible. Although, yeah, it does feel like I'll give them more credit. That's obviously the end game, if I could say that again, where you got to kill the Night King to take out the, you know, Army of the Dead. But it does feel like they're setting it up too much, where it's going to happen in the next episode, where it feels like it shouldn't.
I don't think it will. I think it will just be a big fight, because kind of the things they've done in other big fights, where, yeah, there's a change, but like, it's they've also kind of leave a lot of stuff the same way. I think that's my bigger fear. That, I mean, when I say I want to change, I don't mean that the Night King should be dead by the end, but I do. Like, what I expect is that Winterfell will fall. Like, Winterfell should kind of be destroyed, in my opinion. Like, completely destroyed, and they have to, like, abandon the North. That would make perfect sense. That's a big enough sort of game changer, and you know, we can see characters die and so on. But I think that would be more of the thing where I want the wave, like, cause we've had the, yeah, I know we've had the White Walkers and such beyond the wall, and now they're in the North, and oh, what a cool, weird thing. But I want us, like, I don't want it to end here. I want them to march down to King's Landing. I want them to change the whole world in, like, just a few episodes, so that ice and everything is fucking everything up across the world, and then you have the big fight. And I know I've said it a million times, but they need to be in the Red Keep, or what is it, the throne room, and take apart the throne so they can fight with the swords, because they're made with dragon fire, so they will be able to kill the whites, and that's a symbolic way of deconstructing the whole Seven Kingdoms, ending the Game of Thrones. I've said this every time, and I will keep saying it until it happens.
Absolutely.
And there's no point doing that if the Night King dies this episode. It's like, we gotta kill Cersei with the throne swords. Like, that's a bit of a letdown.
The only way to kill Cersei is the throne sword. We didn't know until now.
Yes. So, should we get into some of the scenes and such?
Yes, yes. Now, it makes sense that they don't pick up with Jaime and Bran, but, I mean, we all wanted to pick up right with Jaime and Bran, right?
Bran is so boring to me, yeah. I don't really care, yeah. Honestly. And it's no hard feelings against, like, Bran as a character. I do like Bran in the books and such, but he's just such a non-character at this point that, like, that wouldn't have been a dramatic scene with just the two of them. You kind of need someone else there to go, fuck you, Jaime, because Bran's not going to say it.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we pick up Jaime's in front of the council, the queen, maybe the prince that was promised. Someone at that table is the prince that was promised, I imagine. But it could mean princess. Who knows?
It's Sansa.
And I do agree, and this kind of gets pointed out in the email here. You know, I'm going to read part of this email because it kind of relates to what we're talking about. This does get kind of wrapped up quick, and I did think that as this was happening. But also, I was like, all right, that's fine. I mean, we got 6 episodes. We can't have a whole episode of them arguing over Jaime Lannister. But... from Noah Stoner in the email, they let Jaime Lannister fight even though he has one hand and is responsible for the death of like everybody's family, but just because they quote need the men. However, apparently they don't quote need the men badly enough to have Tyrion and Sam fight. Well, we'll get into that, but yeah, so they do kind of get this wrapped up. I mean, it's a nice moment. Brienne stands up for him because Tyrion's word means shit at this moment, so because he's dumb. And everyone realizes that.
I like that it's canon, at least.
Yes. How did you feel? Did anything pop out to you as far as how they handle this situation?
I mean, yes. So I think from the email, they're saying, Noah's saying that, like, they need all the men, but it's like, he's got one hand. Like, what's he going to do? I would kind of, in retrospect, I know it's cool to have him ride in on his own, but it would have been kind of cool if he'd had enough magnetism to at least pull some Lannister troops. Like, even, like, if he came with, like, 24 men, yeah. And they're like, we're the ones who are loyal to Jaime Lannister because he saved something at some point. I don't know. He's a great commander. We fought with him at this battle and... all that, maybe. I mean, it doesn't really make a huge difference, and we are very much sort of condensing the story, so, like, what's the point of adding a bunch of extras? But at least then it would be like, all right, I mean, Jaime's here, he brought these guys, but then on the other hand, it would be like, do we want to let Jaime loose with, like, a couple of dozen guys? Maybe that's more dangerous. Maybe we should lock him up in that case, so I guess it makes sense. But yeah, no, it's no stranger to me than when, like, Tyrion and Davos are like, last time I was here, I killed my father with a crossbow, and Davos is like, last time I was here, you killed my son with wildfire, and then they just hang out forever and chat about Dany getting married to Jon. Like, none of these things from the previous seasons have been appropriately resolved, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and, I mean, I guess I'm surprised more that they didn't really... I mean, I guess they kind of showed that the people there don't really agree with it, but they're going to bow to their lords. But, like, after such a big deal in the first episode that just, like, Daenerys was there and everyone's, like, scowling about that. But then the Kingslayer himself is now walking around. I mean, if they just said, like, look... the wall's down. You know, I mean, I guess essentially this is what they say. The wall's down. We'll fucking fuck this shit. We need to come together. I mean, that's what Jon Snow's saying, and he's right. I mean, it did. I definitely thought about it, but it works to me anyways. And, you know, it's also nice because it telegraphs in a way Brienne and Jaime later in the episode. And they've had quite a torrid will they won't they through this show.
Oh, absolutely. And so looking back on it, it does get a bit foggy, but like, what cause did the North have to hate Jaime Lannister? I mean, yes, it was his nephew, technically, you know, speaking, you know, officially speaking, that chopped off Ned Stark's head. So I guess that's the big thing. But as is pointed out in the episode, they don't know he pushed Bran out a window. We obviously know that. But Bran literally says, like, well, clearly that would have been the straw that broke the camel's back, much like you broke my back. Ha, 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 ha. But he doesn't reveal that. So.
Sansa does bring up that, I mean, he attacked, like, the whole thing. Yes, his nephew's son is the one that killed Ned Stark, but he's the one that attacked him in the middle of the street and basically started everything in a weird way. I mean, he's killed both of their, he's killed all the people sitting in front of his fathers, so, or who they think their father is.
Yeah, and Catelyn did kidnap Tyrion, though, to be fair. Not that I think anyone would have taken that as a, like, oh, yeah, oh, no, you're right, we're sorry.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have happened either, but it's been a lot of shit. I say Brienne, like, her testimony actually matters. It makes sense to me that it matters enough for Sansa, and I read Daenerys as like, well, I gotta get good with my sister-in-law, so that's maybe enough, and Jon is saying it as well, and she's head over heels, so it does kind of add up for me. I'm sure everyone in the North still hates him, as they should.
Yeah. Yeah, so then Grey Worm gives him his sword. He is ready to chop his head off. He doesn't even know him.
Great point.
And Bran does point out the, like, oh, the things we do for love, because that's what the line he said before he pushed him out the window, correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah. So moving on, we have a bunch of scenes.
Actually, one thing I want to point out, because when the next scene, like, Daenerys is, you know, talking to Tyrion about, like, you know, either
what
you
fucking idiot he is.
Yeah, either you're a fool or you're conspiring with your sister, and either way, it's like terrible. Now, were they setting something up in the finale last year, or was it just a misplaced cut? Because it felt like, I mean, maybe I was wrong to be suspicious of Tyrion. I mean, there are two scenes in that finale that made me suspicious, but then on retrospect, I don't think they meant for that. I mean, I get, you know, because when Tyrion goes to meet Cersei by himself and then he finds out she's pregnant, but then it cuts away before they kind of come to an agreement, and then he comes out and he's like, we've come to an agreement. So that's when I'm like side-eyeing him, and then when he's creeping in the shadows, well, Jon and Daenerys are getting it on. But I mean, I'm realizing there's not enough time for them to go into that, so I guess that really doesn't mean anything, and I'm just kind of dumb for looking into that, huh?
I don't think you're dumb, but and especially with the creeping in the shadows bit, that was weird. Like, that kind of was the only thing that made me think maybe there was a thing. The misplaced cut, as you referred to it, I never thought that was a thing, honestly. Yeah. Like, but things were happening in those episodes that made so little sense. I think that's part of why people were like, well, clearly something more must be at play here.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't be so fucking stupid as to trust Cersei, right? So there must be a secret deal. But then why would there be a... like, that would make even less sense. I picked up on it, but a lot of people were like heavily theorizing about it, and I don't think it was intentional, honestly. I think it was just something from the pacing, but they didn't discourage it either moving forward. I think, you know, they like to have people make theories and such, but here they're very clearly saying, like, no, that was definitely not a thing. Tyrion's just a fucking idiot, which is a problem and something we've gone into in detail, like, discussing the previous season, because all of his plans are the worst. Even just the... I'm getting heated again, but just the idea that they need to all do all this shit to convince Cersei. I mean, the problem isn't necessarily even that he trusted Cersei. It's that he originally thought, let's go beyond the wall and get a White Walker just to convince Cersei. And this leads to the loss of one of the dragons and literally the fall of the wall. And that is so goddamn stupid that it feels out of character, which is why I find it hard to blame him for it, because it doesn't make any sense that he would have thought that was a good plan. So I just kind of compartmentalize that in my brain into something different, you know? And that's why I've been able to get through it. But now Daenerys and everyone else is like, Tyrion's fucking stupid. And I'm like, well, if this is canon, just throw him over the wall. I know there's no one over there at the moment, but, like, get rid of Tyrion then. I do agree if that's the case, if he's really been this dumb, which apparently he has been. Like, what has he been doing? What are you doing, Tyrion?
Yeah, I think you're right. But maybe this is just all the setup because he's going to have the big win. He's got to have a big win. He's due. He's overdue at this point.
He absolutely is. And, I mean, he's not going to, most likely not going to, like, kill a White Walker. So hopefully he gets some sort of brain win on how they're going to beat things and win and live happily ever after in Spring Eternal.
Yeah. And then in the next scene, we already see horny Arya with her eyebrow lift as she's watching... you know, steamy. Muscle man, yeah, steamy man, steamy man, make weapon.
yeah.
And I mean, I guess, I mean, not that we were like that, you know, it was telegraphed initially in the first episode, but, you know, I didn't realize they're going to get to it that quick because we did make mention that it seemed like there was a budding romance here. And yeah, so he's making weapons. She wants a weapon. He's got a weapon. You know, do you get where I'm going here? This was the big thing that everyone blew up on social media. And it's understandable because, you know, we've known Arya since she was a wee little lad. And now we've seen her grow into a full woman.
Mm-hmm. Wait, how did it blow up? I didn't see social media.
Just the fact everyone's just like, what, the people are pulling up the graphs on Googling Arya Stark's age or Maisie Williams' age, like that moment when later in the episode, like her sex scene happens. everyone's just generally uncomfortable because, again, we've been on this journey with these characters and she was just, a little girl and now she's a woman.
Yes, she is 22 years old, right? I think
yes.
I did that.
Yeah.
But, like, how old was Emilia Clarke in season one of Game of Thrones? So, you know, she's 32 now. Okay, I guess maybe she's a bit older. But it does say in the Wikipedia of the episode that they left it up to Maisie how nude she wanted to get or allow the scene to be, which, you know, makes sense. Because they've had a lot of criticism about this sort of thing. And now they can go, well, it was totally up to Maisie, you know. Yeah. She decided, so we're fine, right? Brian Cogman's there like, it's fine, it's fine, everything's fine. I think the page in the script was just like, and then, you know, whatever you are comfortable with, we don't want to take this any further than we need to, cut to fluttering curtains.
Well, part of it's the patriarchy, because if Bran, even though we saw Bran as an even younger little lad in the first season, but then in this season he was, you know, you know, busting his cherry, however you want it, if I could put it so lightly, we'd be like, hell yeah, Bran, you're the best dude. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we would have been doing.
Can't imagine Bran fucking in his three-eyed raven state, like his blank expression. Yeah. Is real sort of, I don't know. That would be weird. It would be disturbing. Anyway, so we're
like,
still in the episode.
Yeah, Cross in the chat, it was like accidentally seeing porn of your sister. Yeah, it's kind of like that. I mean, but I still think it was a nice moment. I like the way it played out, and this is a different Arya Stark. As we've seen, she's been on quite a journey, and she's, you know, a mature woman now who knows what she wants.
Yeah, and if I can, like, say, I said last episode that a lot of, especially their scenes, felt very like teen romance, and like in this episode we have a scene where he's all like, huh, you can't fight little girl, and then she picks up knives and throws them at a thing and has a little speech about the faces of death, and he gets like super horny. And then there's the scene later where it's literally like from the cliche handbook of like, I don't want to die without knowing what it's like, and it's like the most cliche things ever. But I think when it comes to this, I'm so much of a fanboy that, and I've always kind of thought they should be together, even reading the books before watching the show, I'm like, there's a thing there. So I'm definitely like super partial. So that's why it all is fine by me. Even though I still believe that some of it is not like Shakespeare, it still works.
Yes. Yeah. And I also want to point out, this is kind of one of the first mentions of how safe the crypts are going to be. And again, if I could point to social media, everyone is pointing out that if the Night King is coming, wouldn't the crypts not be that safe? And won't these dead people arise to murder the women and children that are hiding in the crypts? I guess we'll see.
The only way this would have made more sense if Tyrion's the one who's like, surely the crypts will be the safest place in the castle. And everyone's like, yes, good idea, Tyrion. And then they're like, God damn it, Tyrion! Again? Again with this shit? That feels like 100% what they're going to do. And if they don't do that, it's because the writers didn't even think of it, which would be really disappointing because it's such an obvious thing to do. Don't you want to see skeleton Ned Stark, like, fighting things and then the symbolism of fighting your ancestors in the crypts as they break out of their, you know, stone coffins and so on? It might be really good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think we can see Ned Stark because his head was chopped off, but maybe. Or we could see, I think as was pointed out in the Jim and Them Discord, Direwolf Head Rob fighting. So
I don't think they buried him with the Direwolf head, but yeah.
Plus that they probably just destroyed his body. I don't think it made it to, I don't think him or Catelyn Stark's body made it to Winterfell.
Well, that's the real question, isn't it? Everyone still won't let go of, this is not really a spoiler, but just so you're aware, dear listener, we'll get into some book stuff. There's the whole Lady Stoneheart thing, where Catelyn was undead, an undead vengeance demon, basically, more or less. I mean, not really a demon, but she was resurrected, much like many other characters, but came back a little bit off and was all about getting revenge and working with the Brotherhood Without Banners to get that revenge. And, like, that's been a thing for so long that people have waited for and such that, given how much kind of fan service they've been doing, I almost feel like they would do that and say, like, oh, no, they did bring her back just to kind of have that scene of her with her slit throat and, like, as a real monster. And then, I don't know, Arya has to kill her or whatever.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, because, again, I haven't read the books and I've heard a lot of talk of Lady Stoneheart and I understand, like, it's a big thing people are bummed that's not in the show. I don't see how, I mean, again, I don't know the context of it in the books. I don't see how that would fit in the show.
No, I would agree, but they've managed to fit in stuff where us book readers have gone, like, there's absolutely no way this is going to happen. And then Benjen's there, like, seasons after he would have been in the books, like, oh, okay, cool. So I don't know if it will happen or if it will be good if it does, but I feel like, yeah, you're right about the crypts anyway. If something doesn't come alive in the crypts, I would be very disappointed.
Yeah, yeah. Then, good.
But, oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to say Bran is sort of sitting in the Godswood. Jaime comes by and they have their little chat. It's not mentioned here, but it's concluded later that he's going to hang out in the Godswood, which is interesting, right?
Yes, yeah, part of the plan. They're going to use him as bait. And then the most dead person, Theon, will be out there with him, guarding him. But then again, maybe since he's the most dead, that means he won't be dead. But we'll see.
Do you mean that he's, like, what is dead can never die? Or do you mean that he's just going to be super dead after the next episode?
I just mean, like, that seems like the most suicide part of the whole plan is to be out there protecting Bran for when the Night King shows up.
Plus, he gets to the satisfying ending and the symmetry of taking Winterfell, and I really regret putting him as alive in my death poll now, because I think I did.
I might have, too. I forget. Or maybe I did dead. I need my list.
We'll re-listen and make a list for the end of the seasons. So Jaime goes and chats with Tyrion as well. They're talking about how the North people hate him. They're spitting at him and all. And they're talking about, oh, are you sure about Daenerys? Is she sure about you? And Tyrion's talking about what a fucking idiot he is. And they conclude that, oh, Cersei wasn't lying about the baby, though, but about everything else.
Yeah, I'm starting to think, because even though I haven't believed this Cersei pregnancy thing from the start, but now I'm like, all right, she has to be pregnant. Maybe they just lulled me into a false sense of security, but maybe I'm just believing Tyrion, and I guess Jaime to an extent. But it's like, all right, she kind of has to be, I guess. We'll see.
Yeah, no, she has to be at this point. Otherwise, it would just be like another... Otherwise, the point of this scene would just be to show how dumb they are again, and they've already like established this very firmly.
And he does have his callback line here. What, pictured myself dying in my own bed, the age of 80, with a belly full of wine and a girl's mouth around my cock.
Yeah, that old chestnut. So many callbacks in this episode. in addition to this, I mean, Jamie gets a lot of scenes here, which makes sense. He wasn't in the last episode, but he comes and talks to Brienne and is all polite, which she, like, freaks out about. Again, kind of a teen movie type thing. Why aren't you being mad at me? Why aren't you making fun of me? That's how we got to know each other. That's how I thought you liked me. Whatever. And Podrick's there and sort of practicing his swordsmanship and such. But is this the scene that ends with him going, like, I'm here to serve you or whatever?
Yes. So. Yeah. He just, you know, like, I know I only have one hand, but, you know, I'd be honored to fight under you or whatever.
Yes. Very true, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And let's see. So
but I still, I'd rather, I'm more of a shipper for Brienne and, is it Tormund? Is that his name? The wildling guy?
Yes,
I'm all Tormund. About that. They need to get it on. I never bought this. I mean, I like them as friends. Don't get me wrong. Is there a word for shipping some people as friends?
Probably. But okay, fine. But that's literally the only, like, it's just comic relief. Their whole relationship is just like him looking at her all weird and her going like, that's the whole thing, Jim.
Well, but I mean, I was never a fan of when I on my rewatch too. I hate. Well, I don't hate. Hate's a strong word. But I kind of giggle and smirk at the scene when he gets up from the when they're both in the hot spring or whatever, and then she's like, "Jamie!" or whatever she yells. I like it's so melodramatic. But like some people point to that as like such a turning point. And I get it is a turning point for Jamie Lannister, but I don't know. It didn't work for me because I always shipped them as friends.
Yes, you friendshipped them.
Yeah.
That's got to be the term. I mean, I may need to rewatch that scene, but I was like, Jamie! Even though I never really liked him, I was still like, Jamie! Let's see. We get some scenes with Daenerys next, chatting with... let's see what happens
Jorah.
After this.
This is basically he backs Tyrion here, which is a little surprising. But I mean, I don't know. They spent some time together, and you know he's not like a backstabber. Even this would be like his opportunity to try to sneak in as the new hand of the queen. But you know he loves her too much to be the hand, anyways.
Yeah, and I buy this more than the whole thing of Arya going, Sansa's the most brilliant person I've ever met. Even though I believe while they were hanging out, Tyrion was at his almost dumbest ever. Like, I don't think he did that many smart things as far as I remember. But still, I do buy it more that he would back Tyrion here. Because he's kind of like, no, but I knew him in season 4. And he's like really smart. And we're like, yeah, but we saw him in season 5, 6, and 7. So you don't know what you're talking about, Jorah. But he's like an old school fan who likes the original season. So so he thinks that Tyrion will be back, which he might be.
Then we have the Sansa Dany showdown here, which I like how they played this out because I mean she's extending an olive branch, trying to why do some strong females need to fight when they could be friends? They can be more powerful together. But there is that question of well, what of the North? Because the North's not ready to bend the knee to anyone anymore. They want to be their own area, their own land, kingdom.
Yeah, their kingdom. And I mean, she was wearing it before this scene, and maybe she has previously as well. But real bondage outfit on Sansa, am I right? There's got a lot of leather and chains.
That's been the thing. I don't know, what they're telegraphing with that choice, but yeah, that's been the thing for Sansa. Now, one thing that I didn't realize is there's a strong contingent, again, if I could point to social media, of Jansa shippers. And they feel like that's where we're headed. Like, these people are convinced that we're headed for Jon and Sansa to be together by the end.
Oh, you don't know about that?
No, I didn't know about that at all.
Yeah, I don't think that would ever be a thing in the show. There's no time for it. Yeah. But it has certainly always been a thing as far as fans of the books and fan fiction and such. It's always been a thing because we've known for like 15 years that they're not as closely related as they think. Yeah. I mean, they're still related, but hey, it's Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no worse than your aunt.
Plus, your auntie. They have the whole vibe of, like, we grew up together, and, like, I kind of hated you, but then you saved my life, and now we're close, and all sorts of variations. So it's certainly a thing. I mean, they're as related as her, as him and Daenerys, so... but yeah, there's absolutely no way that's going to happen in the show, I'd say.
People are convinced, and they, I saw a lot of tweets that were like, Daenerys, she's a fake bitch coming to Sansa in this scene. I didn't feel like she was being fake at all, honestly. I thought she was genuinely trying to find common ground, you know, like you do with your significant other's family. And I like how it played out, but, you know, she has to take her hand away because, well, the North... Sorry, you're one of the seven kingdoms.
Yeah, it's not the six kingdoms, also, so like, chill out about the North. Yeah, I'd say she's genuine, but it still feels awkward. She does manage to find it with like, wait, so who manipulated who? I'm here fighting Jon's war, not the other way around. But then, as you said, like, we're not ready to bend the knee to anyone. Now, okay, so actually, I mean, it's kind of a good point. What is Sansa going to think when she finds out? I think Jon finding out that he's, you know, the trueborn king, I mean, that matters, obviously. That happens later here. But, like, Sansa finding out, she's been, like, propagating for him to be the king of the North and like, independent and everything. When she knows that he has a better claim than Daenerys to the Iron Throne, she is never, ever going to, like, support the North bending the knee to Daenerys. Am I right?
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That makes complete sense. Because it's like it's a perfect compromise. Like, if they are going to bend the North, if it's Jon on the throne. But it just feels like they have this potential, although I guess to Sansa, because I was going to say they have this potential to have a good queen if Daenerys is on the throne, but I guess to Sansa, she doesn't know that. All we know is that, you know, she's related to the mad king, and she's got dragons and burns people up, so.
Which she does as well, so, like, that's part of it. She's not completely wrong about the whole burning people up thing, and she doesn't think about the consequences of her actions. I mean, she has learned and grown a bit, but still, she's very much... Like, Daenerys, I think, isn't all about the greater good in the same way that other characters in the show are. She is about the greater good plus I want the throne. And anyone who wants the throne, it's like... how much do you want the throne? Because that's going to change how you decide things and what you're going to do. And, like, how much are you and Jon going to clash now that you both know the truth? Because maybe telling her wasn't the best idea. But anyway.
Yeah. And then Theon shows up. I'm a Thansa myself. This is a great Thansa episode anyways.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's a great episode for Theon anyway. And it is really nice to have this scene with Daenerys and Sansa where Sansa's very stiff and that's the only way Daenerys has ever seen her. And then Theon shows up and she's like almost in tears embracing him. And Daenerys is like, what the fuck? She has emotions?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that all works. That's all decent payoff stuff to what we've seen. I mean, obviously, they've been through a lot together, and he did ultimately help her. Then we get to the logistics they were speaking about last week, which was just kind of like clearly just lip service. You know, how are we going to feed everyone? But my thought, too, was I'm sure they have food. They've been eating on the way. So it's not like they just showed up with a bunch of hungry soldiers, but maybe they did. Anyways, people are being fed. There's a strong girl that is mirrors Shireen?
Yes.
Yeah, and she's going to be tough, and she wants to fight, and she's going to protect them in the crypts, although she's probably going to get eaten up by Ned Stark and Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah. Yeah, and so Davos gets to ladle out the soup, and like I've always kind of been like, Davos, what is your role in this whole thing? Because he kind of just by osmosis, and like he entered into Jon Snow's service just by kind of showing up after Stannis died, and Jon Snow was like, oh, we need every man, because that's been his thing forever, and then now he's kind of, you know, he's with the whole crew, and like, he's almost the hand of the queen or king or whatever, and he just kind of is around, and now he's ladling soup, like he's really a jack of all trades.
Yeah, and I feel like this actor, because the Davos character could easily be annoying and like, yeah, like you kind of pointed out, he just kind of showed up and has been around. And sometimes he was annoying me in my rewatch because he's always talking about his cut off fingers and like bringing it up every chance he gets, like how pathetic he is. But this actor really elevates it, and I buy it. I buy that people he would talk to someone and bring his flea bottom knowledge and streets, the school of hard knocks, wisdom, and they would eat it up because I would, because I'd be like, you know what, you're right, Davos. Let's go and do whatever you just said.
Yes. So, I mean, I just need to call out lots of good stuff in the chat there. Lady Mormont is going to beat the Night King. I'm a Lady Mormont / undead Rickon shipper. This is all good stuff.
Yeah.
Jansa shippers should have pies thrown in their face. Don't at me. Thank you, Cross Cottonwood, for these insightful comments.
Yeah.
So we do have then this scene, this reunite, another reunite. What the fuck?
Reunion.
Scene. Yep, that's it. Yeah. And again, Thoros gets to be the comic relief to launch in, like, oh, my little crow, which I do approve of. And basically, it's just some information and catch up on, like, yeah, the Night King's coming, like, right now, or at least his army. And yeah, it just ends with Tormund looking hornily off towards where he assumes Brienne to be in a quite comical fashion that I'm sure many memes have already been made about.
I do feel like, I mean, they are using him for a lot of comic stuff, but it works. It doesn't feel out of place to me. I mean, maybe his milk drinking later in this episode is a bit too far. But even in the other episode when, what is it, when they're like, his eyes, you know, his eyes are blue. And he's like, my eyes are always blue or whatever. Yeah. That, you know, I thought that was fun. And yeah, I think this scene's fun. It's nice to see everyone back together. It is. I mean, I guess I do like that they did at least have a line of like, you know, we had to hide from the dead, the army of the dead, because it just feels like there's this huge army not far away and no one's really seeing them. And even these guys who had to like backtrack and come around them to get there, at least there's a line about it. I'll give them that.
Yes, so this leads us into the big council scene, which you gotta give it to him, it's a better council scene than some we've seen in previous seasons, like when they're deciding to go north of the wall, they're talking about shit that makes no sense, the council with Cersei, kind of strange as well, but this one, we find out a bit more about the Night King sort of thing. I guess everyone just kind of accepts that Bran is a seer or whatever. I guess they've seen enough shit to go like, yeah, you know, he's weird enough to be able to see weird things and everything. I feel like at least one character in that meeting has to be like, the fuck is that kid on?
yeah. I mean, yeah, I gave it to him because, I mean, he survived beyond the wall as a cripple for so long and so north. He was the northest guy, and he came back, so I get it. I mean, he's got the... They're starting to pay off some stuff a little bit. He's still got the Night King's mark. So it works.
Yes, and so we do kind of find out more about what he thinks the Night King's motivation is, which is something that's always been kind of up in the air. But, I mean, Bran lays it out as he wants to erase this world, and I am its memory, meaning that the Night King will come for him because he holds all... Like, he's basically like... You know, one of those things floating out in space with the discs of all the information about humanity on it or whatever. And the Night King hates that. He doesn't want data to be preserved. He's like in Fight Club when you blow up the credit card buildings and all of that. So that's why they're going to use him as bait. I don't know if there's anything else kind of concluded here in the episode.
The one thing I didn't like is that the scene kind of sets up this... You know, because Tyrion decides to be like, you know what, hey, I'd like to sit and hear some of this story. And I kind of wanted to see them have a little back and forth. But then when they cut away, then Tyrion's just in a different place drinking by a fire. Maybe he just couldn't deal with that Bran for that long because he pulls up a seat like, you know, I'd like to hear about this. And I thought maybe this could have been also maybe he would get some wisdom or maybe they could have set up a moment where he can have a good idea. I know we're kind of dunking on Tyrion, but I mean, how do you not with what they've done to the character? But I don't know. I was kind of excited to see a little bit more interaction here with them, but then when it cuts back, he's not there anymore.
Oh, I was like, oh, Brad is going to start like, so it all started back when I was 8 years old and I was climbing a tower. And I would have killed myself if we had to watch that whole scene because it would have been longer than the whole episode. But I see what you mean, because it could have been like, oh, like he gets to spit out these cryptic things and it kind of is helpful and kind of weird. And maybe that would have sparked an idea for Tyrion or something. But yeah, basically the rest of the episode is just people hanging out waiting for the end. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, we get a Grey Worm and Missandei scene, and it seems to, like Cross pointed out this out in the chat earlier, it does seem to fully telegraph his death, because it's a lot of like, when this is all over, we're going to go back to the islands or wherever, which does feel, I mean, feels like such a pipe dream. Like, I know everyone is kind of about pipe dreams, but he's even talking about like, you know, when the day's done, when I don't have to defend our queen, it doesn't feel like, even if they win, it doesn't feel like that's ever going to come.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And it's very much one of those, like, you and me forever. Definitely won't die scenes. More importantly, we get to see Ghost. Ghost is still alive. Yes. He's been missing for like 8 seasons. Well, that's a bit of an overstatement, but we sort of pan up or move up on John hanging out with Sam on the wall, and Sam's like, did you tell her yet, huh? And Ghost is just kind of there, and I'm like, where the fuck were you? Where were you in the Battle of the Bastards? I get you had to have giants, but like, come on, a wolf can't be that hard to... Okay, maybe it is, I don't know, because the wolf is just kind of standing there. But, yeah.
And then,
Ghost is alive.
And, okay, and the other guy's name's Ed, or Edison. They get to dunk on him a little bit for being a virgin. Like, Sam gets to kind of throw it in his face. And it's like, because, you know, he makes a comment about him killing a white or something. But they a little dunk on him a little bit, because it's like, yeah, we've both fucked. You haven't. Get out of here.
True, and they get to say like, oh, truly a sign of the apocalypse with Sam slaying White Walkers and fucking ladies. True enough. But I think it's part of these scenes are about like, I want to fight. No, I want to fight. And Tyrion doesn't want to be in the crypts, but Daenerys says, kind of throws him a bone, like, I'm going to need your brain later, so get down there so you can get killed by zombie Ned Stark. And kind of similar with Sam, right? John is like, oh, you don't need to be. And that's why he starts bringing up like, hey, I fuck bitches.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, then we have the Lannisters sitting by the fire. Now, this, like, little impromptu party that breaks out, I thought it was all great stuff. Again, it is, it's a lot of, it is a lot of, like, the night before the battle, but I'm about that life. I love the, you know, these are our last moments to kind of have a little bit of fun and then kind of throw these somewhat random characters together in a room and let them hang out and kind of live what could be their last hours. And especially for us as the audience, because at least the promise is there. Now, if the next episode, it's not this big battle, we think, and then everyone gets out alive, maybe in hindsight, this episode isn't that good, but it really feels like big shit's going to happen. So I appreciate this room to breathe a little bit, even though we don't have a lot of episodes left.
Yeah, and it has a lot of great little moments, like Tormund. I mean, even though I've been complaining about him, kind of, he gets to try to pull Arya's line with Brienne, like, you know, this could be our last night alive. And she's like, yes, well, I'm glad you're here. And he's like, And she's like, oh, they're fighting with us, fighting, and I'm glad you didn't die. And everyone gets to have a drink, and just, this is kind of what I meant when I meant, like, when I said we get to see the characters bouncing off each other in such a fun way that it feels like there's no way this is going to happen again. Especially because we have this scene, and then we later on, like, get back to them again, and they're a bit drunker and they're still hanging out and talking. And I mean, obviously the later scene has an even more touching moment with Brienne.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Before that, Arya does meet up with the Hound, and then, what's his name there? The resurrection guy. I'm spacing it.
Yeah. What is it? It's, Beric Dondarrion. Is that it?
Yeah, yes. I believe so. And I like that they still had this moment. I mean, even though Arya has got another mission that she needs to complete, but it makes sense. She comes and then she's like, wait a minute, what am I going to do? I'm going to sit here with these two old fucks.
Yes, it's kind of almost a redundant scene, but it is like, oh, we were together for seasons, and like you were there, and I was there. It's kind of like one of those things they didn't need to do, but I don't think it hurts at all that we get to like pay off and call back to even smaller things at this point, because that was kind of like, say what you will about the previous season, it was breakneck speed, and we did feel like they didn't let moments linger as much as they should have at times, like when they're actually like reflecting on the past, and that is a lot of what this episode is, which is why I think it works.
Yeah, and then would it have been too much? Because then we have Arya kind of just shooting arrows, and I wanted, is it Gendry or Gendry? How do you pronounce it?
I keep switching back and forth. I really can't.
I feel like the show kind of Gendry. I feel like the show kind of does too. Now, would it have been too much? Yeah. I wanted when, I mean, I knew he was going to show up here, but I wanted him to be clapping off camera first. Nice little callback. But I guess it would have been too much because that's like her dad, because that's her story there of how, you know, she had that one arrow and she kept shooting it and then she had to go and get it and shoot it again. And then she heard clapping from like up above and it was Ned Stark. And he knew like it wasn't right, but it was right for her. But then again, she does fuck Gendry here, so maybe that would have been too much. Like, she's banging her dad, I guess.
Yeah, I would not have connected that in my brain. But yes, that might have been a bit much. But either way, very standard type dialogue of like, oh, I think she brings up like, so how many people have you fucked? Is he lying here or has he fucked a few people or what do you think? This is an important question. I feel
like he's got to be lying. And I almost thought it would have been too meta or modern because I almost thought she was going to be like, when a guy says three, that means zero or whatever. Because I feel like that's been in rom-coms before. Like whatever, whenever a guy tells you his history, make sure you subtract two. And when a girl tells you her history, add two or whatever the hell the formula is.
Right.
Yeah, it would have been a little bit too meta, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, because she starts bringing up the red woman and, like, was that your first time, etc. He gets to glimpse her scars. I don't think it's a turnoff for him, personally. And that's basically the end of the scene. We cut to fluttering curtains and move back to the party where everyone's talking about how, hey, we've all fought the Starks. We've survived so many battles. This is crazy, man. Can you believe we're all here? And we're like, oh, it's kind of like the audience is saying the same shit because they're actually touching on it. Because otherwise they've been like, yeah, so like, I guess we're doing this in the show. And in reality, we're like, is no one going to mention the fact that you all fought the Starks? But that's what they do.
Yeah.
We lead it into the whole night thing. And yeah, it's pretty emotional for me to see Brienne get knighted by Jaime Lannister. What did you think?
It's such a great moment. Yeah, it's awesome. And you got to give credit to Tormund actually for like really pushing the subject kind of, which I feel like he you know, he's not getting his just due. I mean, because come on, Jaime Lannister, great man for doing it, but should have been your idea. But yeah. And plus the way she plays it, it's great. Like her reluctance and then, you know, Podrick kind of giving her the nod for the go ahead. And then when it happens and she stands up and that smile, like that's the stuff with, I mean, TV show stories in general, like, you know, as people hungry for story, we love that. But it's also like we love that because we know bad shit's going to happen after, which is kind of like sadistic in a weird way. It's because we like cherish this great moment, but it's because we cherish it even more because we know that the promises of doom. And again, like, I guess this episode really is all about being like, clearly this person's going to die because look at this good stuff that's happening to them. Look at these good things they want to do later on in their life.
Yeah, yeah, but what was your guess on Brienne? Do you remember? Because I put her down as living to the end while Jaime died. I'm not sure, though.
I don't remember. I might have put dead. I'll have to pull up my list from the last one and keep it in front of me.
We'll pull them up for the next episode because most likely at least some people will know.
Yeah, yeah.
And speaking of the clap you wanted from Gendry.
Yeah.
I mean, I give Tormund shit, but I love his like enthusiasm here when she stands up. Like this is when you get to see like more than just a joke in his character when he's like, "Oh, that was fucking epic, dude."
Yeah.
Even though it's a simple expression, there's something simplistic and joyful in it. That, you know, even though everyone's kind of excited about it, I'm sure Podrick maybe especially. But still, Tyrion just gets like, oh, Sir Brienne. And Tormund's like, yeah, baby, let's yeah. go. So that's great. And yeah. her genuine smile, like you said as well, probably means someone's going to die.
Yeah, it's just like, it didn't, you know, there's been a lot of payoff between last season and even just the beginning of this season of things building for years, whether it be reunions and stuff like that. This felt like one of the best ones because it didn't, some of them have felt a little rushed, even though it's very, like, exciting when, oh, you know, it's Jon and Arya's back. But this just felt so earned and so perfect. Yeah. It fully elevated the episode in a lot of ways. Such a great moment.
Yes. So next scene, we have a quick thing with Lyanna Mormont, and she's going to fight, whatever. And then we have Sam and Jorah in a kind of great scene, I thought, as well. Another fun, like, callback emotional thing, because it was always kind of weird. I don't know. I don't remember. It was brought up, I guess, when they were north of the wall, but, like, Jon has Jorah Mormont's family sword, so not only is he fucking Daenerys, he's also, like, the son that his father, like, he had to run away from the country, and then, like, Jon basically became, like, his surrogate son and has his family sword. Kind of awkward. But then Sam, good guy Sam, is like, you know what? You can use this better than me. For all his bullshitting about, hey, I killed the White Walker, he's still like, you know what, Jorah, you can fight. I made sure you were, like, grayscale free and all. Now I'm going to make sure you're fucking armored to the teeth with my family weapon. Because guess what? I don't have a fucking family. And neither do you. But at least you can fight. So here you go.
Yeah, I really like this too. Just because in a weird way, I'm spacing on Jorah's father. But he was such a big influence on Jon and Sam. And with them being, you know, brothers of the Night's Watch, it's like a weird way. There's this brotherhood there. I don't know. I like this. I thought this was a good moment as well.
Yes. And then we move to the later part of the night. You can kind of tell what part of the night this is. Like, anyone know a song?
Yeah.
Who can play a song? Yeah, someone has Spotify? Let's go. And Podrick gets to sing a song. And we get a little montage of everyone getting prepared. Theon and Sansa exchanging looks. Grey Worm and Missandei exchanging kisses. And what did you think of the song and all of that?
Ah, I loved it. I love Podrick's version. I also love there's a Florence and the Machine version of it that plays during the end credits. And yeah. I've dug a little bit into the song. What's it? Jenny of Old Stones. And I've read a little bit about how it ties into the books. It's what, like, the history of one of the Targaryens that turned down the throne for Jenny, and how that all played out. I guess it's a big thing from the books. I mean, I don't know if you've read them. I don't know if you make me know it a little bit better than I do, but I thought it was great.
Not really. It's like one of those things, like, there's 100 songs in the books, kind of.
Yeah.
It's vaguely familiar, though.
Yeah, it's something. Yeah, it ties in with, a Targaryen. There's always Targaryens that are like, no, I don't want the throne. And yet here's Jon again. Because also, wasn't the blind Targaryen that was the maester up at the wall, didn't he also turn down the throne? So, you know, they're like, no, please have my crazy brother do it. Or my crazy...
Yeah, basically. And, you know, speaking of all the Targaryens, we get a scene down in the crypts where Jon reveals the truth to Daenerys. She's not super into it, pointing out that, oh, your brother, like, this is where we get into, like, wait, so why the fuck are we listening to your brother about the Night King and all that? He said he saw it. Yeah. And then, like, oh, your best friend read a book in the Citadel? I don't remember if he brought the book. I think he did. Anyway... As Daenerys points out, she doesn't want to believe it because, guess what? Women can't even inherit in this fucking country anyway. So according to their rules, if she's going to go and say, like, oh, you know, it's due to the old ways, I should be the leader. She's a woman, so that's not a thing, unfortunately. And the whole thing gets cut off as they get into all this because horns are blasting and fighting's about to happen. And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a... It is such a bad timing to tell this information to Daenerys, but it's a very Jon Snow thing to do. Or what's his name? Aegon?
I'm never, ever going to call him that.
Yeah. But it's such a... Because it's the Ned Stark in him. It's what Ned Stark would do if he had this information. and it's what John's going to do no matter what, even though the timing is clearly not that great.
I was just going to say, now that you said that, it made me think, like, okay, what can happen next episode that's kind of unexpected? And say they do kill the Night King, or even if they don't, I kind of would kind of love if there was a scene where, like, Daenerys is on a dragon, Jon is surrounded by White Walkers, he's just done a big heroic thing, and, like, he's rushing towards the dragon so they can fly off together, and Daenerys kind of looks at him and has the chance to save him and then decides to fly off because, like, let's let this problem solve itself, which would kind of make her the most evil ever, which would be such a fun thing to do at this point in the story. And it would obviously turn them against each other. And, I mean, I'm sure Jon would probably survive because I think the other dragon would come and save him and then they would both have a dragon. Like, that would be a setup for the next three episodes if ever I heard one.
Well, I'd want a full episode of just each of them on dragons flying around fighting each other.
No, I'm sure that will be, like, I mean, we have the Night King and the two of them. Can you? Because we imagine, like, obviously they're on the same side right now. Why? I know it's not kind of expected, but wouldn't it be fun if we got them all on opposite sides, so all the dragons were against each other, Jon and Daenerys kind of trying to kill each other too, even though Jon, of course, wouldn't want to if Daenerys starts, like, burning Winterfell or whatever because, like, the North won't bend the knee. I mean, that would be a real kind of character assassination of of Daenerys, obviously, because that would be the writers going, oh, we're just going to turn her evil, kind of, after all of that. But still, I would kind of love it because she's so focused on the throne. Guess what? This guy is going to try to take the throne. I guess they probably won't, but wouldn't that be fun?
It'd be insane, that's for sure. Because especially, like, the whole build of Daenerys' arc and her story. What a left turn that would be. Let me read some more of this email from Noah here. As we were saying, apparently they don't need the men badly enough to have Tyrion and Sam fight, even though Sam's killed a White Walker and is still a member of the Night's Watch. And Tyrion's won every battle he's ever fought, when Jon Snow can't even say that. Jon lost at Hardhome and basically lost Battle of the Bastards. The characters, a.k.a. the writers, are very inconsistent, illogical, and hypocritic over who gets to fight. Not to mention how in the first episode of Season 7, Lyanna Mormont announces that every man and woman, as well as boy and girl, will be trained to defend the North. Yet in this week's episode, everybody apparently changed their mind about that based on how many people are going to be hiding in the crypts. Not to mention the Davos and Shireen look-alike scene. Is this the second time Jaime's talked to Bran? I'm not really Bran Stark. About pushing him out a window? You'd think they already would have covered that when they first saw each other over at Winterfell at the end of episode one. I mean, I was kind of thinking about that, but I just assumed, yeah, they didn't speak. He, like, looked at him, and then he walked inside, and that's where the episode picks up.
That's what he does.
Yeah, that was my... I added that. That wasn't in the email.
I know.
Kind of how you would have thought Jon would have tried giving Longclaw to Jorah on the trip on the long trip to the North instead of waiting till they're beyond the wall to do that in season 7. They seem to not even slightly be a bit concerned that the Night King has the ability to javelin snipe a dragon right out of the sky, as well as concerned that the Night King has his own zombie dragon. You could argue maybe they don't realize that the dragon got zombified, but since they know the wall is destroyed and that people who were all at the wall have now made it to Winterfell, the word definitely should have spread that there's a zombie dragon. I do agree with that.
Bran does tell them that in the previous episode, that he has a dragon now, ho, ho, ho. Yeah. So, like, they should be taking it into account. And they don't... Do they point out where the dragons are going to be? Like, even say that? Because it seemed like it would be the one big strategic thing of, like, what do we do with these tanks we have?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think they did. And you didn't even... Like, you would also think you'd see, like, little dragon things on the battlefield they're looking at, too. But no, I don't think they mentioned that. The Danny John romance is the most contrived, pathetic, and disgusting relationship of the whole show. and if I have to start dealing with the quote, it's complicated high school drama between these two, I'm done. I'm quitting this show before it even ends. P.S. Are neither of them concerned they're porking their nephew and aunt? Or have they not gotten that far in the thought process yet? I think a lot of people have pointed that out, but I feel like the more pressing matter, I understand to them the more pressing matter is the throne, I guess. And I think...
Yeah, but I feel like they definitely do realize it. That's why John isn't like, at the end of the council, he's not like, ho, ho, let's go.
Yeah.
He's like, ah, oh, let's be awkward in here and I can't fuck you anymore.
So.
And then the last point here. Here's 100% confirmed who dies next episode. Literally everyone who doesn't actually matter, a.k.a. everyone who was hanging out in that room when Podrick sang his song. Except for Tyrion, because he'll be in the crypts, not fighting because, quote, he's more valuable or more valuable alive. But not because that's what Danny actually thinks, but because the writers are too scared to actually kill him. Now, I'm surprised he didn't point out the crypts point, though, of if the Night King shows up, maybe he is in one of the most dangerous places if that theory comes to pass.
Yeah, especially if they, like, really barricade the doors, which I assume they would do. And it feels like Bran, with his supervision, should have maybe, like, thought about that. Because I think they go, like, Bran, you're going to be down in the crypts. And he's like, oh, I'll be in the Godswood. So maybe he does realize. But it all has to play out a certain way. You know, there's 1,001, there's 500 million realities of how this could go. And on only one of them, we win, Bran may as well say.
Yes.
And because this is the end game, so we'll see how it goes.
And I mean,
it's
a very, it's very negative email, which I get. I don't really necessarily disagree with a lot of these points, but I don't know. I still really like the episode. I think a lot of the stuff still worked for me. I get where Noah's coming from, especially like, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the show and how it's, as it's been winding down and hasn't had the book material, things have changed and they feel different. But I'm along for the ride. Maybe that's a dumb thing to say, but I'm along for the ride. I'm digging it.
Absolutely. And speaking of rides, I got to go watch Endgame now, The Avengers, as we've been hinting all episode. So this was all very well and good. I did enjoy this episode a lot. It was better than the previous one, in my opinion, partially because, you know, they've already put things in place. Now they get to actually marinate things, which is something we have. It kind of felt like with six episodes, we wouldn't get to have these things. And it maybe they put all of these things in one episode, which might be a bit like, maybe it could have been spread out a bit more, but I totally get it. It's going to be a big fight next time, obviously. And we'll see. I think there will be a really interesting discussion next time. And if you want to add your voice, much like Noah, please do send us an email to showswhatyouknowshow@gmail.com. You can also review our podcast by searching Shows What You Know on your podcast app of choice and leaving a review. We'll read that out on the show as well. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Is there anything else, Jim?
There's one more thing.
Oh, what's that?
Winter is here!